so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Toy Department time, kids. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And you in a bright mood today? Seems like you were kind of on fire last night.
Yeah, man. I feel good. Last night was great. I went and saw Chance the Rapper.
I was going to say, you should probably fill people in for those of you who are not on his appointment calendar.
Who are not really desperately following my social media.
Where did Chance the Rapper play there in the Bay Area?
Oracle friggin' Arena, man.
That's a big deal.
It's he said over and over again, it's the biggest room he's ever played, which I assume is true. He's phenomenal. You know, I've seen him four or five times now. So, like, I knew he was phenomenal. I love the music, but also he's just... And, you know, this is interesting because you expressed when we were like, oh, we'll just start with you talking about Chance because that's what you did last night. You were like, I'm not going to say much, as if, like, it's like you don't have anything nice to say about the potential experience of a Chance concert. But
well, that's kind of how I feel.
You saw him at...
I have seen him, and I was very underwhelmed.
Really?
Like, very underwhelmed.
Can I ask why? Like, what... I'm so... I get so confused about what you are looking for. Because, like... I mean, I know you like hip-hop, generally speaking.
Yeah, although, generally speaking, in the... Like, I find most live performance hip-hop to be lacking.
Okay, but Chance puts on a crazy big stage show with a band, and he's running around, and like, I just don't
know.
Yeah,
see, now, maybe that's it. He did not have a crazy big stage show when I saw him. It was really only, like, he had a band, but it was only more than, you know, two, three people on stage most of the time.
Oh, no. Now he's got a band that is a trumpet, a keyboardist with few different things in front of him, and a drummer, and he's got much of the time a three-part vocal, you know, backup singer.
Yeah. So maybe I didn't get the full show. It was also it's also in the daytime outdoor festival kind of set.
Yeah, I think you saw a very early sort of pre-heavy financial backing version of the Chance show. And I would strongly
I mean, it was at the start of this album. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like he wasn't broke.
The thing or unknown. He talks about that. He was playing 1 in 2,000 seat venues when he dropped this album.
Yeah.
So, like, it's gone under huge changes. The last time I saw him, it was even more elaborate. There was like a whole animatronic chorus and like there were like interstitial scenes, basically.
Gotcha. Yes, you know that I'd be into. Like, give me a show.
So
I didn't get that so much from him. It was mostly just kind of him mugging and rapping off the beat half the time.
No, yeah, I feel like you should. He gets crazy, and so he's not like it's not the show to see Chance precisely rap all his bars.
Yeah.
That's not what it is.
Okay.
But it is a production. It is a blast, and it is a giant room filled with just people, just joyousness, man.
Yeah.
And
you brought that it was like one of the most joyful things that you had ever seen. And I definitely, reading Twitter in my home gave you like the rock people's eyebrow, like, oh, really? Tell me about it. Well, it was a big party.
Yeah, and yes, it's the guy loves Jesus, you know, and that's like his thing. And as far as I don't love Jesus, obviously, no, I don't have anything against Jesus. I just don't have a particular love for him. So a lot of times that sort of stuff makes me uncomfortable. But I think because of the what appears to be complete open-mindedness and also pure joy with which Chance loves Jesus, I think I kind of enjoy it.
So you're watching, in the Andy Greenwald, like, the churchy stuff with him is infectious almost for you.
Yeah, not like I'm going to go sign up, but, like, you know, good for this guy.
I think Andy might sign up, by the way.
Yeah.
He talks about the record. I think he wants to convert.
I know. But you know what? Like, I don't, but I understand that. I understand what he's saying. And I think really he's just hyperbolically expressing the exact same feeling I'm having. But it's like, you know, if your love of Jesus means that you love everyone and you're very forgiving and kind, like, God bless, you know? And that seems to be what he's about. So the fact that he's singing How Great Is Our God, like, it is almost a giant worship meeting in a weird way. But it's, you know, like, when you go to Memphis, people who are not Christians go check out Al Green's church. You know what I mean? And, like, I feel like Chance is it's like Chance's church, a roadshow.
Mm. All right. Well, you know, we were talking about this a second ago, I think off the air. I can't even remember now.
You got to stop drinking so heavily during your work day.
I can't remember. But if we were talking about earlier how, you know, the last iteration I saw of Chance Live was right at the start of the album had just come out.
Right.
So, you know, and it was a daytime show, outdoors at a festival. So, you know, maybe I didn't get the real look. I'd be curious to see, you know, but I, you know, the idea of a bunch of people in a room shouting about how great their God is like, that's a run for the exits moment for me. Like, so,
yeah, you know, well, it's interesting so
maybe,
to like,
maybe I don't know, how, maybe I feel differently in
like,
person.
How much do you have to agree with the lyrics of something you're listening to? Because, like, you wouldn't run for the exits at an NWA show, you know what I mean? So to me, it's like, at a certain point, I appreciate Chance for the musical art.
Yeah.
And like, is it...
I mean, I wouldn't run for the exits at an NWA show, but wouldn't you run for the exits at a Toby Keith show?
Sure, but it's not really because of the message, although his message is useless, if not outright, like, problematic. but just in terms of, like, why do I go see a concert? It's about the music. And like I said, I mean, you can't imagine under any circumstance, like Sharon Jones, right?
Okay.
There's a gospel element to a lot of what she did, but you would go see a Sharon Jones show, and I don't think you'd get uncomfortable if she was singing about God. For whatever reason, there's something about a rapper being so unabashedly, you know.
I get uncomfortable when people like.
Because I don't think he's trying to like. He doesn't seem like a missionary or like a, you know, he's just yeah. Like, this is how
I mean, I'll sit through Kanye doing Jesus Walks. I shouldn't even right, say sit exactly. through. I'll dance through that. Like, right. I can put it aside for a minute.
But, so that's what I'm saying. If you can, like, it's the same thing. It's just instead of like an ominous, like stompy Jesus Walks, it's like a joyous, uplifting, you know. Gospel sounding feel.
Our God's an awesome God or whatever. All right. I'm certainly willing to revisit the Chance Live experience.
Yeah. I just think if nothing else, you'd appreciate the showmanship and what they've done with the yeah. place.
So. I like him and I like the record. You know what I mean? When I saw it live, it didn't do a lot for me.
I think it's improved.
Well, speaking of live shows and things we may exit from, we're going to have a little game for you around concerts at the, you know, towards the end of this, but
I'm gonna wait. That's an end.
I feel like okay. That's an ending one. Okay. Let's jump into the homework for this week.
Indeed.
So I gave you, and I don't fully know how we're gonna handle this yet, but I gave we assigned a little show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why. And you, I think, had some reservations going in. So I was a little surprised when you had an opinion about the entire show, because that meant that you had watched the entire show. So,
right.
Without, I guess we, you know, we're going to try to do this without spoiling it for people, because there's, 13 episodes?
Correct.
And we, you know, we just
13 gave 13 reasons why, so to speak.
Yeah. And we just gave this to you last week. So, you know.
And you're not done.
And I'm not done. Yeah. I got to, like,
the way we do this is very simple. Because here's what I can tell you right now that I you know. I had serious reservations about the premise. And I expressed them last week.
You did. So just to recap, right? You were a little worried that it was, you know, because suicide was the, you know, part of the central premise of the show.
People don't know, the premise of 13 Reasons Why is a high school student female commits suicide and leaves behind 13 audio tapes, each of which ostensibly explains and narrates a reason involving another human being, a reason why she ultimately chose to end her life. And these people then have to listen to these tapes, essentially.
Right. And I said, you know, like, it, you know, yes, this is a very dark premise. The show is not that dark. It plays out more like a mystery, sort of compared to the format of Veronica Mars, where, you know, you're running around trying to figure out what happened. I stand by that based on the four episodes that I saw. Subsequent episodes got much darker, so I, you know, I apologize for that. Well,
and even more so than that, yes, everything you just said is true, but also last week when you said that, I said that's kind of the problem to me. And I will say that, generally speaking, I do not feel as though my concerns were quelled in any way by watching the entirety of the series. And I won't go further than that until next week. But I will ask, given the turn it's taken in the ones you've seen, you're through 10, you said?
Yeah, I have seen, yeah, I saw episode 10. That's kind of the last one.
Was that, have you seen the sort of main character's tape yet?
That's episode 11. I started that one, but, you know, trying to binge last night to get to the end, and then that's where I fell asleep.
Okay. Given where you've gotten, which is right up to, and just, I don't think this is a spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched it. And I will also say, since we're here and talking about it, and, like, obviously it, you might want to watch it to hear that discussion, like, it's not poorly made or acted or assembled.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the conceit for me is that, I mean, obviously you've expressed some reservations about it already. You had some reservations going into it, and yet you plowed through 13 of those. So, it, you know, and they're not necessarily easy watches, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah, I mean, I will say perhaps the primary reason I did that is that I did not want to. I did not want to have the opinion I am going to have without
having seen it all. Correct. So this is more you being a completist than you being, like, hooked.
A completist and trying to be fair, but it was not unentertaining. You know what I mean? It was entertaining. It was engaging. I thought a lot, if not all, of the acting was very good.
Yeah. You know what? What I really appreciated about this show.
Derek Luke.
What?
Derek Luke.
No, Derek Luke was great, but
I always appreciate Derek Luke, man. I feel like he's an underutilized actor.
He's great in a lot of things. It's actually probably the best I've ever seen Kate Walsh.
Which one's she?
She was Hannah's mom.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I vaguely recognized her, but not from anything specific.
She was in, like, Grey's Anatomy, and then had, like, it got spun off in her own show. So she was kind of a big deal for a minute.
Yeah, any of that is.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought the show used music very well.
Uh-huh.
The music supervision was really great. There's actually, you know, there's an episode that kind of hinges on a school dance And two of the main characters do it. So, like, that song's going to break out and actually become a big hit, it looks like. And, there's lots of... It's weird.
What is that song?
It's by Lord Huron. It's called The Night We Met.
It's a great song.
Yeah. It's one of the most streamed songs in the country right now. Yeah, so
how
that's
bizarre. Is that show being watched that much?
It must be. You know what I mean? It did about 5 million streams last week. Yeah, so I think it's out there, and I think it is resonating with people.
Or maybe it's just like 1,000 people playing it on
playing it over and over again. There may be some of that. There's a lot of other great music though. A lot of stuff.
Yeah,
it felt really good. It made me feel old a little bit because it was all cover versions of songs that I grew up with, where you could tell that they needed someone to redo them so that the kids might like them still. But very smart use of that stuff. And I think when you have a premise like this, the writing a story like this, whether you like all the choices that were made or not, like, that's an ambitious project, right? To have this show kind of divided the way it is and broken out over all these episodes, and the sort of, there's so much overarching story and things that have to go together. You know what I mean? That I appreciated the level and attention to detail that just kind of went into that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with anything you've said. I don't necessarily think it was a worthy pursuit.
Yeah. See, now that's more a little bit about the choices and the, which is not, you can't separate that from the writing.
And I also don't want to get too far into it, because you really have to watch the next three episodes are very, very crucial to any understanding of what happened.
Yeah. And look, you definitely get that sense, the guy who's the main character, he's for whatever reason, and frankly, this part of it seemed a little forced, is like listening to these tapes very slowly, like over months. And so he keeps bugging people
extremely slowly
with stuff that he hears. And they are always like, well, you got to hear, you haven't even gotten to your tape yet. You got to hear the rest of it.
They're all like, dude, listen to the friggin' tapes.
Yeah. So,
which is exactly how you feel watching it, or at least how I felt.
And there are some, there are, I think, some other problems with him as a character, or at least, the show is sort of told in, flashback a lot. So the pre-death version of this guy, Clay, I had some issues with him just as a guy. You know what I mean?
Like what?
Like, just his inability to ever say or do anything that he really wanted to do, to the point of come on, man. Just get, like, come on, just grow a pair. Say what you want to say. You know what I mean? And just, his inability to take, literally, it's 45 minutes aside, right? There's like nine tapes or whatever.
That's the thing that really drove me nuts, more than any of his behavior.
Like, just finish it, dude. I get their heart.
That's another thing about the premise that, like, I don't know. It seems like in order to go through the machinations they did to assemble this story, like, they must have really wanted to tell this story this way.
Yeah.
And that, I find that a little disturbing and upsetting, I think.
Well, there's now apparently going to be a season two. So, not knowing how it ends, even now it seems unlikely that there's a real narrative reason for season two.
We should talk about that next week. You should finish it, and we should talk about my feelings in full. And the possibility of a season two next week. I think that's an interesting, I had not heard that news, and that news is intriguing to me.
All right. Well, we'll get more out of it. We'll give you a little bit of a chance, to watch the rest of it. A couple things I just want to throw out.
I will say, watch caveat emptor, not in terms of quality or anything like that, but just in terms of like, and I actually think Netflix will warn you. If you'll excuse my language, there is some shit in those last few episodes.
Yeah, it gets real.
There's some shit.
Yeah. Did you know that show was filmed in Marin?
No kidding.
Yeah. And that originally was supposed to be a movie starring Selena Gomez as Hannah.
Oh, Lord. You know, I said that like a real asshole. But Selena Gomez, I feel like, why do I feel like I've seen her in something and she wasn't bad? Is that a thing?
I don't know what you've seen her in. The only thing I can think of is when she did that quick spot in The Big Short. I don't think I really watch movies that she might appear in.
Yeah. Huh. I wonder. Maybe I had that feeling about her music, not about her acting.
Yeah, maybe. I think I'm more inclined to listen to her music than watch her act at this point.
Yeah, perhaps.
So, all right. Well, that's 13 Reasons Why. It's definitely, I think people are going to be talking about
Spring Breakers.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But I feel like that didn't really count.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Cool. Like, she was like a minor, like, she was like the fourth lead in Spring Breakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see that.
She's in a Netflix movie right now. I don't know. Maybe we should give Selena Gomez a chance.
If there's one poor girl who just hadn't gotten a fair shot. Or Selena. Selena Gomez. She is an executive producer on this show. I guess probably the consolation prize for not making her movie. all right. So 13 Reasons Why. Hopefully you started it. And if you haven't, get to work, because we'll discuss the end next week. You know, now morbidly curious, I feel like, to see where it ends up. I'm still, you know, being, I don't know, 10 episodes down out of 13, like, I would still give this show a positive review. It has problems, but I on the whole, I've enjoyed the experience.
What would you say those problems are, just out of curiosity?
Well, I think, like we talked about, like, you know, the implausibility of some of it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, that would be a real problem for me. I also, just the fact that, you know, I also feel like, especially over the length of time, that there's so many people holding secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Someone would have cracked, I feel like.
Okay. But what about the, like, my chief problem with the premise, which sort of continued to be my chief problem with much of the show throughout. Wow, all my doors are closed, but someone is making a boatload of noise on my street. I don't know if that's coming through.
Get a little bit of that.
Anyway, totally derailed what I was trying to say. It's basically that it runs the very serious danger of sort of
encouraging suicide?
Yes, or at least glorifying the act of revenge via suicide, which is a little confusing, wouldn't you say?
I just
like so far in the 10 episodes you've watched, what would you say is the most horrible thing that has happened to the girl who commits suicide but first creates 13 audio tapes, which means she probably spent days at least.
I would say, I mean, the worst thing that's happened is, you know, being in the room while the rape was committed.
Right. Being in the room while someone else was raped, which is a horrible, horrible crime. And yet, see, this is where this is where we should pick up the conversation next week.
That sounds fine. I have not felt to this point like it's really been a glorification. I never felt like, wow, she really made the right choice and really showed them. You know what I mean? Like, she did a thing that teenagers do sometimes. And
really, teenage? I don't see. That's where I have the question.
What?
That's where I'm not sure.
Are you not sure that teenagers commit suicide?
I'm not sure that teenagers without a severe mental illness, which is not discussed in any way. I'm not sure they think about suicide, make 13 audio tapes accusing other people of causing their suicide, essentially, and then follow
I think we have a very different, I mean, look, obviously I can't tell you of a ton of instances of people, you know, 13 tapes or whatever, like there's the method's pretty elaborate, but yeah, I think teenagers commit suicide for similar reasons, you know, on a fairly regular basis. They feel like they've been wronged or that high school doesn't love them or, you know, and they certainly have thoughts of it. I think almost indisputably, but you know, maybe
certainly
we differ
they
on
have
that
thoughts
issue
of it, but yeah, I mean, you should finish it.
All right. I will finish it, and hopefully you guys will too, and we can move on. I feel like this is a point where we really need maybe an NBA playoff discussion to lighten the mood a little bit.
That sounds great to me.
So last week we talked about you know, Russell Westbrook and how he's kind of an NBA Rorschach test, and I feel like this week's playoffs is a perfect example of that. You know, Russ is no longer with us.
What?
I mean, you know, in these playoffs.
Oh, thank goodness.
he's still alive.
See, everything's okay, Russ fans.
he was not murdered by the Houston Rockets.
See, everything's good. Nothing to be upset about. You see how I did that?
Yeah, that was good.
I like overplayed it, and now like just the fact that he's alive seems
great. Yeah. Seems great. so you know, to me, the Westbrook Beverly squabble, perfect example of the Rorschachness of Russell Westbrook, right?
That's a great word that we just
made up.
And by I just co-owned it. I don't know why, because it was all you, but
because I think like who you feel won the trash talk between Westbrook and Beverly depends completely on how you feel about Westbrook as a player.
And fundamentally how you feel about basketball.
Yeah, and basketball itself. And yeah. The dispute was essentially, you know, Westbrook's going off. Beverly's talking about how he's doing a good job locking him up. And Westbrook's like, I got 40 points. And Beverly's like, you needed 34 shots to get those 40 points. And Westbrook's like, your mama. And some people are like, oh, Westbrook, he's so real. You know, like, oh, man, you can't, you know. And I think those are the Russ worshippers, or the people who are focused on he's, you know, got another triple double with 40 something points. And to me, if you take 34 shots, you better have 40 points. Like that is a crap ton of shots. And I just,
and it's not even, you know what? Here's the thing that people don't, that I think maybe guys who think about the game and Russ the way you and I do fail to get across at times. It is like, it's not just that he took 34 shots the other day, because he's great enough. He truly is great. And like, I just don't think anyone's disputing that, first of all. But second of all, he's great enough that sometimes in a playoff game, if he was really hot, I'll rubber stamp a 34 shot night, because that's how good Russell Westbrook is.
Right, but it's not like a Klay Thompson heat check night where they're like, oh, he's got it, let's just keep feeding him.
That's,
you know,
exactly
what I mean?
The point. It's the regularity of constantly the usage rate being at a literal all time high. It just, the way basketball works, is there is Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, the great coaches in the NBA talk about it all the time. I heard someone, I think it was D'Antoni, talk about it in a sideline interview during a game the other day. There's a flow to the way a team plays basketball. And it's the reason why the Spurs have been mysteriously good since Greg Popovich has coached them. There's something more than just getting each person to do their part when you play team basketball, move the ball around, and share. Everyone improves. And even if someone made the argument to me that the reason Russell Westbrook doesn't pass more like James Harden is that he simply doesn't have the court vision that James Harden does. But it's not that simple because...
Although I think that's true.
That's certainly true.
It's not that simple, yeah.
That's true, but it's not that simple because some of it is just a decision about the way you're going to play. And the way the Thunder play, and the way the Thunder played even when Kevin Durant was there, was run a pick and roll with Russell and let him figure it out. And quite frankly, when he's doing that and shooting 34 times a game on the regular, the rest of the team gets out of the flow.
Yeah.
And
I would want to murder someone right now if I was any other guy on Oklahoma City, because not only is it not fun to play that way, and that's what you're doing all the time, on top of that, you just listen to these, like, they run these guys down in the media, like, you know, forget the Jordanaires, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're 11 D-League guys and Russ.
And if we're going to have the conversation about, look, now I think we just watched the series, right? So it's an easy conversation to have. Clearly, the Rockets have a deeper team than the Thunder.
But I don't think it's that much more talented a team.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. The depth is key because James Harden shares the ball and makes everyone so much better that having slightly better players deeper down the bench is more valuable to them than having, you know, the second and third best, or rather third and fourth best players in the series. But I think you can make an argument that the third and fourth best players in the series are on Oklahoma City.
Yeah, because me too.
A year ago, Victor Oladipo was scoring 20 plus a game in Orlando, and Steven Adams was signing a huge contract because he was valued as one of the best young bigs in the league.
Right. The Thunder have like four huge contracts.
Exactly. So. And guess what else a year ago? Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson were on the like injury scrap heap.
Yep.
So like, don't tell me, oh, well, they got Eric Gordon and the Thunder only have Oladipo. No, Oladipo, almost anyone a year ago would have taken Oladipo over Eric Gordon without thinking about it.
Yep.
I think most savvy personnel people would still rather have Oladipo than Eric Gordon. Now, Eric Gordon is a great three-point shooter and serves a very specific role for the Rockets, and he's been great in it. That's not a diss to him. But, like, Victor Oladipo is a young talent, and so is Steven Adams. And I think these guys have been somewhat diminished by being on Russell Westbrook's team. And, right. And it's not because – I honestly don't think it's because Russ is, like – you know, selfish in a bad, evil, you know, way. But I do think he's so psychotically determined and self-confident that he sometimes behaves selfishly.
He's a great player. He has his charms as a person. He's super fun to watch. I get all of those reasons to love Russell Westbrook, but I don't.
I actually think, other than the like fake tough stuff, I think he's a delightful person.
Yeah,
like he seems like one of the realest, most, strangely enough, one of the most sort of average hipstery guys in the league off the court.
I feel like from a sports standpoint, I'm now in a position where I'm on the corner of like running this guy down, and I don't really want to be on that corner because I get the joy. But I think it has to be acknowledged, and I don't understand how these Russ lovers can't acknowledge that there is a definitive ceiling to how far you can go with a player playing like this.
And I think I said this last week, but like the approach from the Russ people is, well, there's no one around him, so why should he bother not shooting?
Yeah, that's the only thing you could say is his teammates are trash, basically. That's right, the only way to...
But the other side of that is it almost doesn't matter how good you think his teammates are, because you simply aren't going to win playing the way he plays ever. Yep. It's never been done. It's not going to be done. So you might as well try to play in a way that involves the rest of the squad and see what you got.
There were a couple stretches this year that they did that, and I thought the Thunder were better during those stretches, but, you know. I don't know. I could be wrong. We should jump off of this because we've been We've been Russ heavy in the playoffs. I'm curious if you think.
Well, he's gone now.
Yeah, is the gone fishing? 1, 2, 3, Cancun. Is the East still wide open in your eyes?
Well, I think it's wide open in the same way it was wide open before, which is like if the Cavs don't suddenly start to look better on defense and more like the Cavs of last year's playoffs than the Cavs of this year's regular season.
All right, so then I guess the question is, do you think the Cavs have looked like the Cavs of last year's playoffs in, you know, through four games?
No.
They won all four, but all four that's were right. close. Yeah.
And they just, the Pacers are a terrible defensive team. And offensively, they did a lot against the Cavs.
Yeah.
So, like, the Cavs played outscore them against the Pacers, who, you know, do have a pretty good offense. So, like, that's just kind of the series it was, offense against offense, and the Cavs were better, which is not nothing. Especially when it's a sweep, but it didn't, that series didn't do anything to, like, if you're someone who thinks the Cavs simply aren't playing good enough defense to win a title at this point, that series would not have changed your mind, I don't think.
I mean, I feel like every team left.
The question is, who's any good
to beat them? I feel like every team left, save Atlanta, could plausibly win the Eastern Conference. I'd still pick the Cavs. But I think any team
Washington, left. Toronto, Milwaukee,
Boston,
Chicago.
Oh yeah, you're right. I guess. Well, you know what? Chicago's chances are remote, but I wouldn't totally rule them out. As crazy as that seems.
Like, I don't know how I would feel. About
I mean,
that.
You got to assume Rondo comes back, right? That, I mean, obviously, I don't. Well, without I mean, Rondo, making one. But
he better. He better be good. If we're, it's like, you know. Their back's against the wall. Now,
I mean, I do think there's sort of something to, like, playoff Dwayne Wade.
There know? Is. No, you're right. I mean, look, I can't disagree with what you just said. I think any of those teams, you could imagine a scenario.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't see any way the Hawks could win. Although I do think they could win this series against Washington. I don't think they're out of that.
Really? Even now?
Yeah, even now. What do you mean after last night? They lost by like six on the road.
I know, but I don't know. I just don't you feel like just like everything's been wrong since Dwight Howard signed?
Well, I mean, I think there's everything, you know, things tend to be wrong when Dwight's around, but I feel like no, I feel like these teams are dead even. And I think that the, you know, some of the intangibles kind of favor the Hawks a little bit. They're a much better defensive team. I think they play a little smarter and more together.
Maybe.
So yeah, I think they got a real shot.
Paul Millsap also has been just spectacular to watch in this.
And they don't really have much of an answer for him except to foul him a lot.
Yeah,
which sometimes works.
I'm surprised actually that Markieff Morris, I guess he's been in foul trouble a lot, has been part of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I would be very surprised if that series doesn't go seven.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So.
But I don't think the Hawks could. I don't think the Hawks have another round in them.
No, probably not.
And then, I mean, I think it's pretty much all we need in the playoffs, right? You got anything else you want to throw in there?
Nothing's changed. The Warriors are probably going to win unless they get hurt.
Can we agree that the first round just takes a little bit too long?
It's just hard to get me to say less basketball.
Like I really enjoyed the first couple of weeks. And I'm really looking forward to the second round of the playoffs. But, like, that's probably 2 weeks away still, right? Like, we're not going to see the Warriors or the Cavs for, like, 10 more days.
No, it's not that long. We're at game 6 and 7 already. I mean,
yeah, but there's going to be, like, 3 days in between each of those for, you know, right? You know how it goes. I don't know.
No, I actually think I think the schedule this year is less absurd than in past years. Like, hold on. I'll pull it up right now. But today you have 2 game 6s. So if Toronto or San Antonio can win on the road, that will end either of those series. And then tomorrow you have 3 more game 6s.
And then when would the prospective game sevens be?
Let's see. I'm going to have to go a little deeper for that. But I think they would start right on Saturday. Yeah.
All right. So they'd be done on the weekend, and then next week. Next week is the second round. Is that what
you're saying? Sunday would be the last three game sevens if necessary.
All right. I mean, it just feels like it's taking a little bit of a
while. Sunday. Think about that Sunday, for God's sakes. Are you kidding me? How awesome would that be if you had game sevens, like, you know, 12:30, 3, and 5:30 Pacific time?
Yeah. Look, I'm loving the playoffs. I'm all in on the playoffs. It's just a lot.
I think the first round takes a little while, but I think for someone who actually wants to watch as much as possible, it's the right pace.
I feel like this second round is going to be the right amount for me in terms of being able to have a life and like try to watch some other TV and also still have lots of basketball. I feel like second round mix is going to be perfect for me.
No, I mean, that's true. And I will say, though, part of the issue, I think, is actually that so many of the first round series, the ones that are still going, have been intriguing, perhaps surprisingly so.
Yeah. I mean, really, when you think about it, it's like all these series have been intriguing. Even, you know, the Cleveland series was a sweep, but all the games were close, so it was very watchable. And the Warriors are just watchable, even when they're kicking people's ass. So.
Oh, and the Blazers are, too, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are something to watch.
Right, and you're just going to get nothing but scoring because, you know, no one wants to play defense on the Blazers.
If they had had Nurkic, it would have been a much more interesting series. Yeah. Not that they would have won, but maybe they'd have won a game.
All right, let's stay in sports and jump into ESPN real quick. Weird day, obviously, at ESPN. Made some really fascinating television. Like, I don't know if you happen to catch.
I did not watch any, but tell us.
Like the 6 p.m. Sports Center, which I'd say is probably Jamel and Michael, and certainly the most controversial Sports Center. Definitely the Sports Center that if you're one of those like conservative truthers that thinks that politics is ruining ESPN, like that's kind of where you start. You know, those guys just kind of did a free form segment at the top of the show, where they were like really working out a lot of emotional stuff and acknowledging like how much hate they get and how many people hate them and, you know, how many people wish that they had lost their job that day. And, you know, I'm definitely of the position, and look, you know, obviously we're in the media, both of us,
lost a job in the media.
Yeah. You know, and I was just going to say, like, that's a thing that happens to you, regardless of your level of quality almost. I mean, you were very lucky if you get through a media career without being fired.
You're probably not that good, frankly, because you haven't attracted any attention or done any.
There are some people who are just stars and it works out for them, or, you know what I mean? Like, they find their role. It happens. But
even those people often end up bouncing around, like, from place to place.
Yeah. I tell people it's like being a manager in baseball. Like, you're going to leave or you're going to get fired sooner or later. Like, that's just how it goes.
Exactly. It's just the way the business goes.
So, you know, out of that, like, the notion of celebrating anyone losing their job is just really weird and bizarre to me. Like, they're.
That's like celebrating injuries in sports. Like, people who do that stuff are just psychos.
Yeah. Like, these are people, they have families. You know what I mean? They may say some stuff that annoys you, like, you know, like I understand, like, if Darren Revelle lost his gig or whatever, like, there'd be a certain amount of like, ha ha, Revelle. But like, he's a guy, he has a life.
That's probably the day to leave Darren Revelle alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, he's just a dude right about sports business. And, you know, maybe he does it in a way you find a little bit douchey, but like, that's the end of it. Like, why would you wish horrible things to happen
other
to him?
Days.
Yeah. You know, like, just leave it be.
Because he's totally a tool, but like, but yeah, exactly.
But
he's also a human being.
I think what's interesting about this is when you start looking at the people that they got rid of, and, you know, they seem to fall into a couple of categories. There are the people who, you know, did stuff, but, you know, you wouldn't think of as essential players in, like, say, the SportsCenter universe. You know, your Jay Crawfords and your Jamie Sires of the world. No, knock on them. They seem like great people. But, you know.
Jamie Sire, Bay Area start.
You know, but you're not thinking like, oh, God, sport. Hey, how can they continue SportsCenter? Jamie Sire's not there anymore. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so right. there's that category of folk. And then there are some really accomplished people where you say, okay, well, they just got rid of a ton of that department wholesale. And you wonder what it means for coverage going forward. I mean, it's pretty obvious that they, you know, wiped out most of their hockey staff just straight off the bat. Baseball Tonight, massively pared down. And people like Jason Stark let go.
Yeah, exactly.
College football, ton of those guys let go. Andy Katz and a bunch of their best college basketball reporters let go. So, you know, and then today, you know, I mentioned the baseball thing. Like they announced that ESPN is going to carry MLB's Intentional Talk. I think you're going to see a lot less baseball tonight. Carl Ravage's role apparently massively reduced, and they got rid of a ton of those guys. So it's going to be interesting going forward, and I don't know if that just means they're going to talk about these things less or if they're going to talk about these things in a way that just seems cheaper. I don't know what the plan is. I don't know if it's a signal that they're going to be trying to acquire less of those rights going forward, because all this is really is an attempt to deal with the fact that you know, people are cutting the cord. ESPN's hit particularly hard by subscribers because they get by far the most in fees per subscriber. So, you know, if you're Fox Sports, say, you know, you're still losing subscribers because of cord cutting, but you're getting like a dollar per, whereas ESPN, you're getting like 7.5 per. So it really hits them in a big way. And then on top of that, they have all of these, you know, rights deals that come up periodically, and they're paying $1 billion on the NBA, $1 billion on the NFL, and $1 billion, you know what I mean? College football, you know, so it, you know, those things add up, and all of a sudden it becomes kind of unsustainable. So, you know, I'm curious to see where the network goes. But I think that this kind of mode of scaling back is going to be prolonged until these economic conditions change. And, you know, we know from working in radio, they may not ever change. Radio is perpetually in this mode. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. And I think it's really going to affect the things that you see going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Trent Dilfer, gone.
Trent Dilfer, gone. Yeah. They did. The football stuff was a little bit interesting because obviously they're not really going to knock down too much of the football coverage.
Danny Cannell gone.
Did let a couple guys go. Yeah. You know, I think, and this is another thing. Right, you know, Danny Cannell gone, Ryan Russillo's role scaled back, and I'm guessing that Stephen A. Smith will probably get that prime ESPN afternoon radio slot. And so you wonder, like, the, you know, the loudest voices are certainly going to continue. ESPN offered Skip Bayless like $4 million to stay. So, you know, they have money, and they're choosing to allocate it with things that you know, tend to be the squeakiest wheels in the television debate, right?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, yeah.
None of this sounds like great news for any of us going forward.
Well, it's hard to know what's going on inside a company that massive, or what exactly they're. Because some of it just feels like cutbacks. They had to pare down. You know, a couple of NBA reporters lost their jobs. That seems like, you know, we've probably got enough NBA reporters.
Yeah, I mean, they mostly pared down the staff. They trimmed down a lot of their local, you know, we're trying to take on the local newspaper sort of coverage.
Right. And I think in part that's because everywhere's local, you know, NBC Sports Bay Area or Fox Sports Minnesota, all these stations now have expanded their staffs to do such a good job of covering local sports with a homer angle that less and less people go in for the ESPN impartial reading of the local sports team.
Yeah.
And so I think, and it's not always necessarily a Homer thing, but just in terms of like, you have your local people that you love, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same way, you know, in the Bay Area, like Crook and Kipe are on KNBR, and that's huge because the Bay Area sports fans love their guys. You know, that sort of stuff is happening on a local level, and all of these stations have been built out into websites with beat writers and all this stuff. I think ESPN has backed out of that thing, and so they're paring down that staff.
Yeah.
When you see guys like Ed Werder, Trent Dilfer, like I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know either. Other than, you know, they had probably had to get to a certain number. And, you know, some of it has to do with contracts and other stuff. And I don't think this is quite done. I think there are going to be people, you know, John Buddrakas's name came up, but he's actually still there. But he's got a deal expiring. And, you know, when that deal expires,
Hannah who knows? Storm will have her role significantly reduced. There was a report that Buddrakas was going to expire, his contract would expire.
Yeah. So,
but apparently that's been walked back.
So yeah, it's uncertain times, and that's just the, you know, the media game. It's weird. There's more and more demand for content, but less and less money for it. You know, at some point that bubble burst, right?
I do wonder if this is a case of, well, I mean, here's the thing, right? ESPN has built its model essentially, and they've done so effectively, mostly around having carrying games. It's becoming easier and easier for people to get access to games for either for free or for like direct payment to the source.
Yeah. I mean, look, I would say ESPN's model was built around SportsCenter in games, and really the same thing has happened to both in terms of, you know, now obviously access to sports news is constant and easy. Like, you know, people sort of forget, like,
right,
sports news was your, you know, 2 minutes in the, you know, 20 gap at the, you know, on your local news affiliate for years before ESPN came along. And then they were the only people doing it. And, you know, now it's everywhere. So that's, you know, that streams out. And so it was, you know, it's much easier to get access to games for sure.
And so I think like they're in the position of the newspapers in the 90s where like they've got to find a different way to, or at least they feel that way. They feel like there's no more money in SportsCenter or games, so we've got to find.
I think there's still money in the games. I do. Like, I think, you know, people are still watching those games. They're DVR proof. Advertisers still want to advertise in those games. Now that maybe they're paying too much, you know, for certain things,
right?
But I think there's still money in that. It's going to be the ancillary programming what they, you know, they may need to figure out.
But like, what is that in? And maybe more to the point, because this is, I think, the lesson that newspapers did not learn, is like, where do you extend the brand into rather than those things you were doing? Because, like, those eyes are going somewhere.
Right. Well, that's why opinion shows have proliferated, because they're cheap to produce.
Yeah.
You know?
I just don't know. I can't believe there's not something better than two idiots yelling at each other.
Yeah, but apparently people want to watch that, right?
Do they, though? Do they really?
I mean, look at Fox. Like, they try to do another thing, and that's eventually what they morphed into, because that was, they felt, the best way to compete.
Skip and Shannon, you mean?
Skip and Shannon, Cowherd and Whitlock. That's what the whole network
these
is.
Shows are not succeeding.
They are succeeding relative to what was there before. So, you know, I don't know.
I wonder how much of that is just slow market share growth as opposed to, I think a lot of this stuff is, you know, barely more than leaving the channel on from the game the night before.
Yeah, look at the success of First Take and how much the people on those shows, how much money they're making. It doesn't happen if you're not at least sort of moving the needle.
I don't know, but they paid them that before anything happened. And they still, like, I don't know.
I think way more people watch First Take than you think.
No, I mean, a lot of people watch First Take, but this is kind of my point, is like how many people are watching Undisputed? Barely any, you know? I think First Take is still riding the ESPN machine. It's like the same, like I really do wonder how much better First Take does, like from a market share perspective or just even outright than say like Cold Pizza was doing.
Significantly better from what I understand. But I could be wrong about that. You know, and you have to remember too that First Take for a long time wasn't riding the ESPN machine because it was on ESPN2 up until like 4 or 5 months ago. So, you know, which is much more of a you need to seek it out. It's not necessarily going to be popped up on the TV at the bar, ESPN is. All right, we've gone deep into the sports media weed. So maybe we should jump out and talk about Win It All.
Yeah, let's do that.
That is the latest Joe Swanberg collaboration with Jake Johnson. We've talked about a few of them on the show before. This one set in the world of underground high stakes poker.
Kind of.
Well, mostly. Really? It's kind of what it is.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about a guy who is he's a bit of a gambling addict and not super good at it.
A bit.
And, you know, he gets an opportunity, comes into some money that's not really his, and you can sort of imagine how it goes from there. Where were you on Win It All in the Swanberg canon?
I really liked it. You know, I have heard a lot of people say it's their favorite. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but it's great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'd still like Drinking Buddies a little bit better.
I actually watched Drinking Buddies again recently. It really is wonderful. I've probably watched Happy Christmas 4 or 5 times. I just find it so delightful. I do love Anna Kendrick. And I thought Digging for, like, honestly, I don't know. I like them all a lot, but it's even now that I sort of just walked through the ones I can think of off the top of my head, I do think Win It All, it's in the middle at best of those, but I really did enjoy it. And I think for people who might find the other Swanberg movies a little bit mumblecore-y, like too much so perhaps, just in terms of like, they're very slice of lifey. Not necessarily a ton of stuff gets resolved. There's usually sort of an ending that, the narratives are usually looser and more just like people living their lives than like specific hardcore film structure.
Yeah, this is much more plot driven, I think, than those movies are. Like wondering what happens to this guy.
To the story.
Yeah, you know, what's going to happen to him is definitely right. The primary feeling that you'll have while watching this, which is not true of a lot of the Swanberg stuff.
True indeed, but I think, you know, it shows that these two guys, who I think this is their fourth movie together, at least their third. They get something about writing and making a film that lets it feel very truthful, if not always 100% real. You know, real is a weird, elusive thing, but they're very honest. Their movies are very honest about humans, and this was no exception to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, The Ringer had a pretty good interview with those guys.
Yeah, they're great. I'm going to try to get us an interview.
Oh, cool. That'd be awesome.
I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a Who knows, Joe Swanberg.
So always good. It's always good to have a guest on the podcast every now and again. But I, you know, I thought the insight that you know, Jay Johnson's really into cards, and Joe Swanberg isn't, but that Joe Swanberg's essential career. I really should put my phone on silent.
Is professional over here, guys.
Is essentially a gamble because they're financing these movies themselves.
Yep.
And often really kind of laying their house money on the line. Although I'd assume less so now to make them.
Well, so, but it sounds like still a little bit so now because they're getting more ambitious each time.
Right. As tends to happen.
But it sounds like they want to do it again, and I'm all for it.
Yeah. And one of the great things about Netflix and their voracious desire to take over the world is that they can be patrons to these kind of people and provide a place to get the stuff made and for you to see
it. Yeah.
You know? And I think that's a blessing. I'm thankful for that.
I totally agree with that. And also, like, no diss to Joe Swanberg, and I'm sure there are things about the film that would look excellent on the big screen, but it's not, he doesn't necessarily, or to this point has not, made movies that you feel like, oh, I missed it if I didn't see it in the theater. So this is a perfect environment for him to, like, get it to the widest possible audience of people who might actually be into him. Yeah. And I think releasing a movie that Netflix publicizes on, you know, on Netflix the way they did with Win It All. Like, if you're a Netflix subscriber, you've already heard of this movie because they've been advertising it. Like, when you open the website. So I think having that exposes it to a huge group of people sitting on their couches who might watch it and go, huh, I wonder what else that guy's directed. Or, like, it'll recommend Happy Christmas for you after you watch it, you know, and you'll check that out. And I think, frankly, like, that's where Joe Swanberg's biggest audience is sitting on their couch watching Netflix.
Right. Where I would like to be one of these days.
Oh, buddy, what's wrong?
I mean, nothing's wrong. It's all good. I just, you know.
You're just too busy right now?
Doing, like, four shows this week.
Four concerts?
Yeah.
What are they?
I'm two in already.
What'd you see?
I saw.
I mean, I talked about Chance. You didn't say anything about your concerts.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know how. Like,
give of yourself, Derek Madden.
Noteworthy. You know, all of these shows are.
You said so.
Because I'm already forgetting. What did I watch on Monday? Oh, on Monday I saw a little band called the Greeting Committee, out of Kansas City, who are lovely. And then Tuesday was Silver Sun Pickups.
Oh, how was that?
That was fun. You know, I've been to a million of their shows. And they played at First Avenue, and we're very excited to. First Avenue is one of those clubs like the Fillmore where people are kind of just jazzed to be there. So get some of that vibe. That was good. San Francisco band, Tycho, tonight. And then the XX tomorrow.
Oh, that's pretty big, pretty electronic couple of days for you here.
Yeah. So I'll be busy. But I'm going to try to get in front of the TV. Maybe this is a good point. We have one more thing to do, but this is maybe a good point to talk about what we should have people do next week.
We forgot we still didn't get to Better Call Saul.
We still didn't get to Better Call Saul.
Think we've gone too deep. I mean, I think we have to save it again. But I will say, when we talked about it briefly after the premiere and you had not yet seen the premiere, I expressed a slight, not a serious, but a slight concern, more of a concern that I might eventually get concerned about the, like, lack of interesting action and, like, preponderance of legal logistics.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I think they're...
because they're
wrapping it up a little.
Things are happening, and I am having fun.
All right. They're, you know, Mike's pulling off some crazy stuff.
Good. Mike, I love me some Mike.
It's good. That show's been very satisfying. Where are you at on Sunday Night HBO right now?
Well, I did watch Silicon Valley, which is another thing we should probably talk about next week.
Yeah, so maybe we'll make that homework, since that's an easy one, is, you know, get caught up on Silicon Valley.
There'll be two episodes by the next time we talk.
Are you a Veep person at all?
I watched the first couple seasons of Veep sort of in a binge session at one point a couple years ago. And I haven't really watched it since, although I did enjoy it.
I agree. There's a little bit, so there's something about it, and then it's really funny and really enjoyable to watch, but there's something about it that feels like not quite essential, not quite appointment for me. When I know there are people who think it's the best comedy on television. It's just never quite sat with me in that way.
No, I would agree. For instance, I do watch every episode, although I'm maybe 1 week behind, of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I feel good about that decision.
Oh yeah, that's, I would. I'd go Veep over Brooklyn Nine-Nine personally. But
all right,
I have, you know. But Mike Shore's a dude. I'm pro Mike Shore. All right, so we'll have people watch Silicon Valley. And obviously try to get through 13 Reasons Why if you started that. I'm going to add, leave us a review on iTunes, because I finally just checked and we have one review.
Really? Is it crappy?
No, it's not crappy. It's not crappy. Well, it's a decent review. And I would just say, make it funny. I'm not even asking you to be nice. Like, if you want to make fun of us, great. But like, just go to iTunes and write something funny.
Right on.
And yeah, I'll leave it at that for now, because I feel like the 13 Reasons Why assignment is a hefty one. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, yeah, I don't, you know, I think we previewed my, negative leaning take, but it's not exactly a negative leaning take that you should not watch it.
I feel like this, if you like listening to us talk about television and you like to talk about television with other people, this is a show you should have an opinion on.
A part of the reason I was so willing not to spoil this for you is that I had a long and interesting discussion about it with my friend last night on the way home from the Chance concert. Because I was thinking ahead about this discussion. And I was like, did you watch this? And she was like, yeah. And then, so I got some of what I needed to say off my chest.
Oh, that's good. It's good. I'm glad I got a chance to let it out. Yeah. All right, real quick before we get out of here, let's play our little game. Something that's been happening on Facebook. Yeah.
So this is a thing that I am too old and confused and disconnected to have known was happening on the internet. But yeah. Derek is locked in.
I'm not sure how I find out about it, because as you may know, I'm not on Facebook. But someone asked me about it, so
I don't think I did realize that. I'm not a guy that makes sure he's friends with everybody on Facebook. So
I exist on Facebook because I used to have a page, but I deactivated it post election. So that like something I had to do.
Well, we probably were friends then, and
we're still friends. Disconnected. You can still search for me, I think. But I'm just not active on. I'm not on it. So it's a game that people play on Facebook. I think on Facebook it's actually 10. We're gonna do 5 for the sake of time. 10 concerts, 1 lie. So basically we're gonna give a bunch of concerts that we've been to, except one of them is fake and the other person is going to try to guess.
Okay.
You wanna go first?
Whatever you want.
Sure. Give me your 5.
Okay. My 5 concerts are The Dead. And any incarnation counts. Borns, Charlie XCX, Pearl Jam, and The Far Side.
Ooh, this is interesting. Now, when you said The Dead at the box, I thought you were going to go all jam bands, which would have been super confusing to me to guess which one's the lie.
Yeah, I didn't want to go crazy on
it. But then it occurred to me that maybe you'd seen all the jam bands. So,
I haven't seen actually all the jam
Disco
bands.
Biscuits.
I will tell you
that. Leftover Salmon. I want to know the one that you haven't seen yet.
I certainly have not seen Leftover Salmon. You would have to pay me to see Leftover Salmon.
Yeah, so you could have totally been like the dead and fish and leftover salmon. I would.
Yeah, but I didn't want to do that. That would be dumb.
All right, I am gonna say
hot tuna. Sorry, go ahead.
I feel like you've seen. I feel like we've talked about you seeing Pearl Jam. So I'm gonna rule that one out. I'm gonna rule out Charlie XCX because only because that really just on the face of it seems like the most obvious one that you haven't seen. And I'm gonna go with the Far Side.
Mm.
No, you seen the Far Side?
A good guess, but it is Pearl Jam. I have not seen Pearl Jam.
Damn it, I got that wrong.
Yeah.
You haven't seen Pearl Jam.
No, and it's not like it's not because I don't want to see Pearl Jam. It's just for whatever reason they've either been too expensive or too not touring around where I've been.
That's weird because reason. I mean they tour kind of on the reg.
I know, but I don't like. I feel like I either don't hear about it or like I don't know. I'm just not traveling in the right circles. But certainly, if someone was like, "Hey, you know, Pearl Jam's in town. It's like $30 next week. I'm going to that right, show.
Well,
I do want to see
Pearl Jam. I'd very much like to take you to your first Pearl Jam show. That would make me happy.
I'm into that.
I'm in the dozens myself. So.
Yeah, let me know. I'll go to a Pearl Jam show. I like Pearl Jam. Yeah. I'll probably have to like listen to some of those post 2000 albums for the first time, but
yeah, it's not a bad idea, but that's not necessarily essential actually to enjoying a Pearl Jam show.
Oh, I'm sure not, but I like to know some songs. You yeah. know?
I mean, you're definitely going to hear some of those songs for sure.
I was discussing last night about, I don't know if you have the same experience. I still know like all the lyrics to, I mean, for instance, most half of the songs anyway on 10 and Verses and Vitalogy. But lyrics don't really stick for me anymore. Like I was realizing as much as I've listened to Chance last night, how few lyrics I actually have remembered, you know, or like someone like Kendrick, whereas like I could rap doggy style front to back pretty much. Or like half of the B.I.G. catalog or, you know, a bunch of Tribe Called Quest stuff, but Beastie Boys, but stuff I have listened to just as much. And in fact, much more recently, I don't remember lyrics like I used to. I wonder if it's just a getting old thing.
I think for me, that's definitely, it's my oncoming senility. Cause I used to be very, like I said, yeah, I used to have all the lyrics and now I can't do that stuff anymore either. And
but do you still have the old songs? Because I mostly do, I feel like.
Some of them. You know what I mean? Some of them. Like, I could, you know, I knew every word on 10 backwards and forwards, and now I know the songs that you hear a lot on 10 backwards and forwards. So.
Yeah, I feel like that stuff would come back for me really quickly, though, whereas, like, I just can't make the new stuff stick.
I also just think it's a function of you have much more going on in your life than you did when you were 16. And you know,
totally.
I mean? So,
and you know, in your brain, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah, you know. All right, so I did my five. I went for maximum self-embarrassment.
Right. I tried to get weird because, you know, Charlie XCX is pretty weird. I went to that show because it was split bill with Bleachers. But
I didn't even find that objectionable. I would go watch Charlie XCX if no, I like, wasn't cool. doing anything.
I honestly don't have a lot of embarrassing shows because I like, unlike you, there have not been a ton of shows I've like, I don't know. For me to go to a show that's embarrassing is usually like a prohibitive expense for me.
Oh, whereas gotcha. Like, yeah, for me, it's sometimes I'm obligated to go to shows.
Exactly. You have the constant opportunity and the frequent obligation to go to embarrassing shows. Yeah. So.
All right. So my five bands are Creed.
Oof.
Hoobastank.
Oh.
The Chainsmokers.
Okay.
Nickelback.
Oh.
Smash Mouth.
I'm going to say you have not seen Hoobastank.
I have, in fact, seen Hoobastank multiple times.
Was it Nickelback?
I have seen Nickelback multiple times.
Wow. So it's the Chainsmokers you haven't seen?
It is, in fact, the Chainsmokers that I haven't seen.
So it's just I thought about going that way just from a recency bias issue. You know, like you haven't had the chance yet. Because you're going to end up having to see the Chainsmokers. You must realize that.
I think there's, you know, just because I don't,
they're so big now.
They are big. And, you know, I'm on record as I don't hate the Chainsmokers. I'm in defense of the Chainsmokers.
I don't hate the Chainsmokers.
I don't know if you happened to catch them on Saturday Live a few weeks ago, but that was brutal. It was a brutal, brutal performance. And what do they do? In fact, aided by lip sync. It was still brutal. There was apparently some lip syncing going on, but, like, you know, they're DJs. And so, but the one guy has to, like, sing on the songs, and he's just not used to like standing out there and holding the microphone, and you know, he has no idea how to hold a room, and it was just really weird and awkward, and yeah, it was bad. It was very bad. but I haven't seen that, although there's a festival the Chainsmokers are at. I went to a festival the Chainsmokers were at, and they're playing opposite Arcade Fire. If they had been on a different time, I would have gone to watch the Chainsmokers. Yeah. I would have, and I would have been probably very disappointed. most of those other bands were completely for work things, and I did not make a conscious choice to go see.
What's really crazy is how bad the early 2000s were for music.
Yeah. Saw a lot of bad bands in the early 2000s.
So much 90s. Of that stuff was popular, though. Like, you saw those acts because they were hugely popular.
Yeah. I've hung out with most of those acts on top of that.
Well, that, you know, doesn't mean they're bad dudes. The guy in Smash Mouth is a big Bay Area sports fan, so yes, I've interacted with him on Twitter.
Big KMBR fan, in fact.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I say to people when they ask about music industry stuff, how fun a person is to be around has zero relation to the quality of their music. Zero.
Also, like, in defense of Smash Mouth, like, pop bands are pop bands. Like, whatever.
Yep.
They made some good pop songs. Like, they did their job.
Yeah. And they have a couple of real, you know, this is not in defense of Smash Mouth, but they do have some all-timers. You know what I mean? Like,
it is a defense of Smash Mouth, though.
Those songs will be around long after the Smash Mouth guys are gone. You know what I mean? Like, those songs will remain.
Exactly. And that's what a pop band is. Yeah. Like, I don't know if they had. I don't know if when Smash Mouth started out, they had ambitions of being like a, you know, punk act or like something.
No, but different. I remember when they were like, you know, the up and coming thing. Like, here's this new band with a big hit. You know, like, what's Smash Mouth gonna turn into?
Yeah, but, and they turned into like adult rock.
Yeah, they turned into a band that had one more hit.
middle of the road, like pop rock. But that's a fine thing. People can do that.
People can do that. Indeed,
people are allowed.
All right. Well, that was I enjoyed that.
You enjoyed my defense of Smash Mouth?
I enjoyed your defense of Smash Mouth, and I enjoyed that game. I would play that again with more bands at some point. But we got
to
get going. Yeah,
Pearl Jam. I haven't seen Pearl Jam. I would like to see them.
All right, we'll try.
They're expensive,
that
though. That's the problem.
That's why I'm here to help.
Yeah, I need your help.
You know, they played Outside Lands a couple of years ago. They do the big festivals.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
So maybe you can fold it into those
anymore now that I can't get the free VIP bracelet.
That's tough. Yeah, all right. Well, I'm going to go back to my life of privilege.
Yeah. Why don't you just go see another free show tonight and then another one tomorrow night? How does that sound, big guy?
All right. That sounds pretty good to me. I'm into that. There'll be some free dinners to go with those free shows, too.
Oh, it's terrible. You son of a.
You're allowed to hate me. If you listen to this podcast,
are you allowed to grab some food from that dinner and send it to your unemployed friend out in California?
I'm not sure how well that would travel, but sure, we'll go.
It's for like that. Blue Apron, right? It's just like you with leftover banquet food. you're my Blue Apron.
Yeah, here's this half-eaten fried chicken that I had last night. Enjoy,
Blue Madden.
Blue Madden. All right, and on that note, tell the people.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.